Hour number two of Three Man Front on this Tuesday. Pat Smith, Langelm Roberts, John Saber, Conrad Van Order with you until 12 noon. Then Matt McLaren will take you to 2 o'clock. Then from 2 to 6, you can hear the Paul Feinbaum Show right here on Jocks 94.5. We've got basketball tonight here on Jocks 94.5 as the Auburn Tigers visit College Station, Texas, taking on the Fightin' Aggies. That's a 6 o'clock tip-off. Pre-game show starts at 5:30 right here on Jocks. And then tomorrow night, you've got Alabama hosting the Florida Gators. So some good basketball coming up in the next 2 days.
Yeah, are you excited about pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training?
Next week. You better believe it.
Do you go, how much of that do you watch?
All of it.
Every bit of it?
Every bit of it.
So what can you take away from pitchers and catchers when they're there?
Well, I mean, you get your daily updates and stuff that's going on. I mean, the biggest thing I look for is to make sure somebody doesn't have a sore arm. You know, you like to see that they've come into camp and, you know, they've actually had a throwing program. They're not picking up a ball for the first time when they get spring training, because all these people, you know, they take a few weeks off and they get back into it. So World Baseball Classic is going to take a lot of players off of different rosters. So it's going to be a little bit different. That's an opportunity for young guys in camp, or guys that have, you know, 75 or 93 on their jersey, to get an opportunity to play a lot. Because, prime example, the Cardinals, you've got the National League MVP, Goldschmidt, is playing for Team USA. Nolan Arenado's playing for Team USA. Adam Wainwright's playing for Team USA. We got a couple other pitchers that's playing in the World Baseball Classic. So those are opportunities for young guys to be able to step in and get some work.
How many guys do the Braves have on the World Baseball Classic roster? Because right now, it's just the list that I'm seeing, I'm not seeing a whole lot.
Well, I would assume, because Acuna has been playing in the Caribbean series, so I would assume that Acuna...
Yeah, I'm out. No Braves players. I'm out.
That's on Team USA.
Correct. So I'm out.
So you're not even going to watch Team USA?
There's no Braves players. I do see a lot of I see a lot of players from teams that I just really dislike.
Do you see a lot
Dodgers?
Of,
I see Phillies.
Do you not see current Braves play? Were they Braves at some point and then opted for more money?
Well, let's be honest. Most of these guys, at some point in their career, they were Braves.
So
either they were phenoms coming out of high school or college, and the Braves, because of their great scouting, were able to draft them and then gave them away at some point.
I just didn't realize that Landrum's going to be anti-USA
shows.
For the World Baseball
I'm not going to be anti-USA. I'm not. But
you know, China does have a team, I believe, in the World Baseball Classic.
I will watch, because Tim Anderson from Tuscaloosa and the White Sox, he is on that roster. So.
Oh, okay, there. That's the one thing.
That's his connection.
The local flavor.
Right there.
Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, flu season's here. You got to make your home healthier with Trane's Clean Effects. Home air cleaner moves up to 99.9% of airborne particles, including those that cause virus. It's 100 times more effective than standard air filters, 8 times more effective than HEPA room filters. Contact a Trane certified dealer for the Clean Effects air cleaner.
We're going to be joined by Rocco Miller coming up in just a minute. Final note on baseball. Get ready for the rule changes. And we'll touch on that when we get closer to the spring training games, because you've got bigger bases, you're obviously going to have a pitch clock, and the shift is now banned. So there are certain things.
Shift does not hurt my feelings.
So there's going to be some guys that are probably going to have a little bit higher batting averages.
The lines there in the middle of the diamond, that's going to take some getting used to. That's just weird. I don't even know if we're ever going to get used to that. Will we? I mean, maybe it was. I didn't watch college basketball before the 3-point line. I don't remember watching college basketball before the 3-point line, but I guess the 3-point line, that was a little bit different for people watching. You know, the Euro lanes that aren't like or weren't like we had with the rectangle, as far as the paint area in basketball.
Yeah.
That's always a little bit different when you see something, but I don't know. The lines there on the field, have we taken it too far? With baseball.
Let's get ready. A lot of people's going to have to get used to it coming up in spring training.
The robo-umps, they're coming soon.
Yeah, right around the corner. So changes are coming. One thing's for sure, though, we still got great basketball. And this
Amen.
Is the favorite time of the year. And joining us now on the Bud Light Hotline is Rocco Miller, College Hoops bracketologist, analyst, bracketeer.org. One of the best when it comes to nailing this information of who's going, where they're going to be seated, those things. And we're happy to be joined now on Three Man Front. Rocco, I hope you've had a really good basketball season so far.
It's been a fast one, as always. There's just so much going on every single day. Can't get enough of it, but it's also very difficult, even at my level, to keep up. You know, it takes not a lot of sleep being had these days, but that's why we love it.
Absolutely. All right, so the first question out of the gate. Alabama's having a special season. Only three losses on the year, and those three losses come to some powerhouse teams. When you look at this Alabama team from your standpoint, do you see them perhaps, even if they were to hit a slump here, maybe closer to the SEC basketball tournament, is there a potential for them not to be on that one line once we get to Selection Sunday?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think right now them and Purdue are the two teams that are comfortably a number one line, but it's college basketball and things can change in a heartbeat, you know, any week, whether it's a large upset, a couple of tough losses, all of those things are constantly being measured. So right now, you know, Alabama does have cushion as well as Purdue, but like I said, it could quickly change. They're going to play road games at Tennessee. They're going to play Auburn in both places, obviously coming up, and then they're going to go to a Texas A&M team that's having a wonderful SEC campaign, only two losses for the Aggies. So I look at those three road trips as their toughest tests, but they also have tests at home with the other Auburn game, the Arkansas game coming up, and I think they'll get tested by Florida tomorrow. So out of the remaining eight games for the Tide, really kind of the only two that are layups on paper are the South Carolina road trip and the home Georgia game. So I do think the Tide need to probably win, you know, at least six of those eight. I think feel safe. Again, it always depends who it's against and where it happens. But yeah, there's still quite a bit of season left. And if, you know, if they end up going 4-4, God forbid, you know, they might not even be a two seed, just depending on where the losses came from.
Rocco, when you look at the overall field, you've been covering college basketball and predicting the tournament there at the Bracketeer and bracketeer.org. That's where you can find all of Rocco's stuff, and Rocco joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. But you look at the upper tier, when we think about some of the past teams that we've had, those elite teams, if we've labeled them, when you look at the field this year as it stands right now, where would you put this year and some of those upper tier teams in relation to past years as far as overall quality and level of eliteness, if you will?
Yeah, this year has been pretty different in a lot of those ways. I mean, typically by this time of year, you know, we might have four, five, six types of teams that are just a cut above the rest, or maybe it's just three. I think even though Purdue and Alabama, as I've said, are the clear top two, you know, we saw Alabama lose by 20 plus against a team that's probably not going to the tournament at Oklahoma. At least they aren't right now. I think the dynamics of college basketball with the extra COVID year, with the sport just being so much older, across the board, not just at the Power Five level, but also at a lot of the mid-major level. I know you're in Birmingham where this is the best Conference USA we've seen in over a decade, right there in UAB's backyard. And, yep. You know, that's just a really good example of what we're seeing across the sport. And I think it makes it very difficult to have dominant teams, because we're in a day and age where, if a kid's not getting the minutes he wants, a lot of those kids might find greener pasture at either a smaller school or a similar school in their same conference. And, coaches are getting very savvy on how to build their rosters. You know, you need great guard play. You need a pick and pop guy, like a big that can roll. You're seeing, you know, so many great big men across the country this year. But you're seeing that at a lot of different levels. So I think it sets up for a fascinating NCAA tournament. I can't tell you how many upsets they're going to be. I always hope for a lot, but I think what it's going to provide is a lot of tough to predict results, as most of the season has gone.
All right, so let's talk about the SEC. So you've got Bama, you've got Tennessee, but after those two teams, you got an Auburn that's now out of the top 25, but still playing good basketball, still high up in the SEC standings, and a Kentucky. What teams in the SEC would, in your opinion, as of right now, would be on that bubble, so to speak, about potentially making it to the big dance?
Yeah, I think Kentucky's a great place to start just because Kentucky still has a lot of work to do. Right now, they would be in my first four in, which kind of sounds wild probably for Wildcat fans historically. But the fact of the matter is they just have the one great win at Tennessee. I think the home win against Texas A&M still matters quite a bit because Texas A&M's right on the fringe of the bubble. We'll talk about them in just a second. But I think as you go through some of the different measurements, You know, in the quadrant one measurement, again, this is just a way to filter results, but Kentucky just has that one win. They're 1-6 out of 7 tries. Even out of all their top 2 quadrant games, they had 11 tries and they're 5-6. So they start to improve as you go down, but then you get to the end of their resume and they have that ugly loss to South Carolina at Rupp Arena. One of the worst SEC teams we've seen in years. So that's something they have to overcome. But the schedule for Kentucky is still very much there for them to work their way pretty high up the board. If they can finish strong here in February, which they've done in previous years with Calipari. The Texas A&M Aggies, they've been yo-yoing for me from last team in to one of the first teams out. Right now they're back on the outside after losing at Arkansas. But they've got a road win at Auburn, you know, and Texas A&M, I think it's impressive. I think it's something that the committee would discuss in their case, that Auburn's only home loss is to this team. It's a very difficult building to win in. It was the nation's longest winning streak when they did it. They also have a win against Missouri, who's a tournament team. So that gives them 2 wins in the top quadrant. But again, they had losses to Wofford, who's having a rough year out of the SoCon, and to Murray State, which falls in the third quadrant. So they have 2 bad losses they're trying to overcome, and they've got a mix of results where they're still under 500, much like Kentucky, in the top 2 quadrants, despite a dominant conference record. So I think it's important for anybody, you know, maybe new to this process, to realize that conference record does not matter. It's your entire body of work. When we tip the ball off November 7th, it counts just the same as it will in March in terms of an evaluation. So every time a team takes the court, it's a piece of their story, and you have to add to that story, but it's just as equal as something that happened back in November.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
November.
Rocco Miller joining us. He is a part of Bracketeer. You can go to bracketeer.org and find the latest bracketology from Rocco, and he joins us on the Bud Light Hotline. All right, you're talking about Texas A&M. They're taking on Auburn at home tonight. This Auburn team, while, yes, you still got them as an 8, and every bracketology that I've looked at, either Auburn is an 8, a 9, in some cases as a 7, with the remaining schedule that they have, what is best case scenario for Auburn? What is potentially worst case for Bruce Pearl and the Tigers?
Tigers are extremely interesting because, and I do have them as the last 7, but they're right on that 7-8 border. And most of that has to do with other teams, not the Tigers themselves, because the Tigers have just been kind of coasting along. You know, I mentioned that home loss to A&M. They get a chance to revenge that tonight in College Station, but they're also getting a chance to play Alabama twice. If they get one of those wins, that dramatically gives them something different than the teams they're being compared against, like your even your Iowas and certainly your New Mexicos and your Florida Atlantics. They're not going to get the opportunity to play the number 2 team twice. So Auburn has their entire season right in front of them. They're also going to host Tennessee, which would be an elite win even on their home court. And they get a chance against Missouri at home, which is another tournament team. And they'll go to A&M, like we just talked about, plus go to Rupp Arena. So Auburn, for whatever reason, their schedule this year was completely backloaded. And, you know, we've been talking about this on other shows for weeks, that we're going to find all about Auburn in February. And I think that starts here this week.
In regards to Conference USA, you mentioned it. Andy Kennedy is a frequent guest on this program. The Blazers went through kind of a lull. They went to the Florida schools. They lost a close game to Florida Atlantic, to FIU, and then kind of had a tailspin. Jelly Walker was out for 5 games. But now they're on a 4-game win streak. And you mentioned Conference USA is better this year, but are we still looking at a one-bid league, and that being Florida Atlantic? Or if UAB were to upset Florida Atlantic, win the automatic bid, is there a way that FAU still could get in the big dance?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. And I was fortunate to be in Boca Raton the day they played the first time. So I got to see UAB firsthand. That was a great game. Came down to the last minute. The Owls ended up pulling that off. But, of course, UAB has returned the favor and looks great doing it in the 9-point win on February 2nd last week. And I do think Florida Atlantic right now has just a little bit of room. You know, they're sitting here with just 2 losses, And again, they're playing in the 10th best league. Usually Conference USA is somewhere around the, 13 to 15th best league. So, that is helping a lot when you're playing your teams like Charlotte or Rice or Middle Tennessee, the fat or the middle of the league. And, that they also have a road win at Florida. I think that's extremely important, because if Florida works their way back in the bubble, they're probably about the 10th team out right now. That's also going to help Florida Atlantic tremendously, especially, in that event where Florida Atlantic could take another loss.
All right, Rocco, as we look at some of these teams, not necessarily teams that right now you and others have seeded maybe 1, 2, or 3, but you start looking at 5s, you start looking at 6s, 7s, 8s. That's been a number where we've seen teams that have been able to advance to the Final Four. Out of that collection, after the first 3, 4 seeds, what is maybe one of those teams, two of those teams that you say, hey, keep an eye on these guys? Because there is a potential for them to put it all together and make a run depending on matchup when it comes March.
Yeah, so we got to start with Creighton. Right now, Creighton's a 7 seed. They lost 6 in a row without their big man, Ryan Kalkbrenner, and he was out with mono. And if anybody's had mono, you know it knocks you, it can knock you out for up to a month. Pretty much what happened to him. They took a bunch of tough losses that still matter. But they're going to end up getting seeded probably anywhere from 5th to 7th, even if they keep finishing strong. But when they've had him fully healthy, I think they've only been beaten once or twice, and they're blowing most teams out. I think Creighton's a team in the summer when they got Baylor Shireman in the transfer portal. Everybody nationally was hyping them up, and that's the team we've been seeing the last almost month now. I'm able to run a report on a website called Bart Torvik. It's an analytics site. If you do that for the last month, Creighton's the number 5 team in the country. And I fully expect them to keep performing that way should he stay healthy and should the whole team stay healthy. Injuries can change a lot of things in a hurry, as we all know. And another team I'll pull out is I really do like this Florida Atlantic team a lot. I mean, call me crazy, but I've been flying out to see them play. Watch most of their games, or I record all their games. And I just love the team that Dusty May has. It's a team that stayed together from last year. A very rare thing in college basketball this day and age, especially at the Conference USA level. I think they're a team to advance in March because they have 2 bigs that they can rotate. Vlad Golden, I think, is where most fans know him, the big 7-1 Russian player who is just a matchup problem. But they also have a thick big backing him up in Rosario, who's a tremendous player. And they have so many great ball dominant guards that can get you a bucket, and it makes it almost impossible for defenses and rotations to match up with. I think the Owls are built for a good run in the tournament. And then I think the obvious ones are North Carolina, who just doesn't have a great win yet. The same thing happened with them last year, so they're all the way down at the bubble level right now. And of course Kentucky, because the talent level, if those teams just turn it on late, it's a brutal matchup to see North Carolina with an 8 next to them or Kentucky with a 10 next to them, and we might end up having that. So I think those would be 4 good ones to keep in mind.
As far as conferences from top to bottom, in regards to you, the eye test, forget about the analytics, but based on the basketball that you've seen this year, is it Big 12 or Big 10 when it comes to total conference, top to bottom, best conference in basketball this year?
Yeah, I think the Big 12 has made that decision pretty easy this year because, in one sense, from a math standpoint, only having 10 teams helps, and they don't really have a bad team. I know Texas Tech's only won the 1 game in league, but they had a pretty good non-conference. They're still measuring out as like a top 50 team in all their other results. And everybody else in the league is super competitive. Oklahoma is what, like 8th place maybe, and blew out Alabama, the number 2 team in the country. That just goes to show you that night in and night out, it's a war in that league. They have the chance to do something unprecedented, and that would be put 6 teams into the top 16, which is where they've been the last couple of weeks in my bracket forecast. I don't think we've ever seen that. The most I've ever seen was the Big 12 about 3 years ago had 5 of the top 16. And so just the fact that they have 6 that dominant teams, plus you might get a 7th or 8th with West Virginia and Oklahoma State, just shows, there are no nights off in the Big 12.
I know you're based out of San Francisco, and I know you travel all around the country watching these games, but I have to ask you about St. Mary's, because what they did to Gonzaga the other night, Gonzaga came to Birmingham and took care of Alabama pretty easily. In regards to that conference, do you think St. Mary's could be a team that could make a run?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've liked this program, you know, for years. And, you know, I think they're getting smarter and smarter in the way they play and, you know, use the big effectively. They play outstanding defense. I think Logan Johnson's been there 5 years now. He's the best on-ball defender in the WCC, one of the best on-ball defenders in the country. So that gives them a lot that they can take away from other teams. They're also incredibly prepared. I have the opportunity to meet with their staff on a regular basis, and we text all the time. And these guys are up like till 4 a.m. putting their game plans together, even when they're playing teams in the middle of the pack in their league. And that's why I think you see their numbers extremely high in things like KenPom in the net, is because when they go out and they'll play like a San Diego or a Loyola Marymount or a team in the middle of the pack of the league, they'll not just beat them. They'll beat them by 20 plus almost on a regular basis. Because they're just such a difficult matchup, and they're just overprepared. They know what each player's strength and weaknesses is on each of the opponent's teams. That sounds like something every program should know, but I think their attention to detail really shows, because they're certainly not the most athletic or talented team, but they have a great collection of players and a very high IQ basketball team, and they're a team-first team, and that's what makes them a lot of fun to watch and cover.
One of the best at what he does, he is Rocco Miller. You can find his website. It's very informative, bracketeer.org. That's bracketeer.org. Rocco, great stuff. Thanks for coming back on with us this year. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon as these conference tournaments heat up, and then eventually we will get to March, and that is where your expertise is absolutely needed, especially by these two guys that will try to competitively fill out brackets and win money.
Yes.
Anytime, gentlemen. Always a pleasure. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Rocco. Appreciate it. Joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there.
A lot of bad out there. We will address some of it, and one of them involves, well, Tom Brady, kind of. We'll do it next in The Worst Thing I've Seen.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. I mean, that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.